You're listening to Radio Influence.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is Ian Beckles, and we have a special guest coming up. But before that, I want to give love to our title sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. They provide the best medical care for your family in need when you're going through times where there's an accident. A lot of us have a lot of questions, and my people at Hess have all the knowledge that you need. They have 16 locations in the area. 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress. Call Hess. 1-800-618-HESS. Now, what I'm going to try to do going forward, because I don't like to sit here and talk to myself for an hour at times, I'm always going to bring in a special guest. And we've had some people from JoeBucksFan.com come in before. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is bring in some knowledge. So we have an old school cat here, not quite as old as me, but old school nonetheless, Mr. Chidi Ahanotu in the house. How you doing, brother? How's life?
I'm good, Ian. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, man. So what's going on in your world, man? I mean, we're all trying to keep busy. What are you doing to keep busy?
Well, you know, I'm a single father of three boys. So
that'll keep you busy.
Yeah, and then some. Mm-hmm. You know, and everything's always changing in their world. So, you know, it keeps me on my feet. And I honestly try not to do as much as I can. I try not to do as much as I can because I wanted to be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always something. There's always something happening, man. So, and I've been lucky to be able to be there for them.
Good stuff. You know, my kids are all a little bit more grown now. You know, we went through the whole, you know, sports, and, you know, my kids aren't playing sports anymore. That was a highlight of my, you know, parental career, just sitting there watching them play sports and growing up that way. You said your son is still playing basketball? He's still playing basketball, your son?
Yeah, my oldest son. All three of my kids play basketball. My oldest son tried to walk on to St. John's University.
Oh, so he's serious then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's trying to be real serious. You know, he loves it, you know. So that didn't work out at St. John's, so he's, you know, back on the grind and taking a step backwards and going to junior college.
Okay.
And then hopefully he'll get discovered.
So he still has aspirations of playing in the league?
Oh, yeah. He would love to play in the NBA, but –
But there's overseas as well.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he doesn't have any, you know, delusions of grandeur. He just loves the sport. He wants to see how far he can take it. And you know, if he can go overseas, you know, that'd be fine with him.
No doubt.
Know? So
now, how many years did you get? How many years you get in the league?
I got 12.
You got 12 years in the league.
Yeah, I got 12 years.
Wow, I didn't know you played that long, bro. I mean, yeah. You came in. What year did you come in?
93 was my first year.
So Sam Weich's first year was your first year? Nope.
No,
Sam Weich's second year.
Second year, yeah.
Because I remember, I kind of remember everybody coming in the locker room, but it's kind of hard for me to pinpoint where it was. I just knew you guys were a little bit younger. You know, you got 12 years out of that. So you played for the Buccaneers, the Buffalo Bills. I didn't read your resume because I'm gonna get it out of you.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
All right.
I know you played for the Bills. Who else did you play for?
Well, I was here for like 8 years, and then I left and went to St. Louis Rams.
Okay.
And then I went to Buffalo and fell in love with Toronto, your home.
Yeah,
your
home, you did.
Your hometown.
No, well, Montreal is my hometown.
Oh, Montreal. I always mix that up.
Yeah,
I always
mix
that up. So I went to Buffalo Bills, then I went back home to San Francisco and played for the Niners, and then went to the Dolphins. And
I don't remember all this.
Yeah, and then I was at the Dolphins half a season. It was the first time in my career, Ian, I was sitting on the bench, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, they sold me a bill of goods, assigned me there.
Sure.
Which was really silly, if you want to hear it. I mean, you remember Adewale?
Yes, Agunleye.
Yeah. He's Nigerian.
Yes, he is.
So Rick, the general manager, was Rick, what the heck is his last name? You know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Played for the Detroit Lions, linebacker. Anyway, he said, finally told me, he said, well, we Adewale didn't want to sign here, so we need to get another Nigerian guy.
That's what he said.
That's why they
wanted me.
I'm very serious.
Oh, man.
So I'm sitting on the bench wearing, you know, the smiley dolphin on my helmet, which, you know, remember, we used to have the interstate battles with the Dolphins.
Correct.
Back in the day, and we'd practice against mm-hmm. them at training camp. So I never really liked the Dolphins.
We're not supposed to.
Right, right. Yeah. So here I am wearing their colors, sitting on the bench, the most demoralizing thing mm-hmm. that I could do. Finally, I said, you know, just let me go home. I was an old guy by yep. then. I said, I'd rather be at home with my kids than doing this.
No doubt.
So they did. And
did they pay you for the rest of the season?
Unfortunately, the only way to do it if I signed a conduct detrimental.
That's tough. That's tough.
So, yeah. And I didn't care at that time. I figured my career was over.
But once, and you're going to know as well as I do, yeah. once the love is gone,
yeah.
you got to step away.
Yeah, and I still love the game. It's just my body was failing me, you know?
Well, the love means to put your body through anything regardless. Right. That runs out eventually.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of reached that point, and I went home to the kids, and I sat at home for 3 weeks, and I thought it was over. And the
it's never over.
Yeah, the Bucks called. Yeah. And they said they needed me. I said, get out of here. It was Mark Dominic calling me.
Yep.
And I thought he was joking with me. That's the first thing in my mind, like, this is a joke. And he said, no, we have some injuries and we could use you. And, Rob Marinelli was a D-line coach still.
The great.
And I said, well, great. And needless to say, my passion for, you know, playing again, because I was going back home
sure.
to Tampa. And played eight games here, and then that was it. No one wanted me anymore. And to this day, I think it's because of that conduct detrimental that I signed, that people assumed that I must have done something, you know. Because I had a pretty good, you know, when I got back here and it was actually playing, I had like 5 sacks in 8 games, you know. And I was producing. I was getting game balls every game, you know. And, you know, no one wanted me. No one called anymore after that. But like I said, I was pretty much ready to be done.
Sure.
You know? So I was fine.
Yeah, and I remember the point. And when you say I was done, you're not done until the NFL says you're done.
Right.
Because you always, and I even now I look and I'm like, you feel like I want to go back out there, which is crazy. But when I first got out of the league, you know, my last year I played in Philadelphia, I played every snap. Okay, I didn't come off the field one play the whole year. So then the next year, I missed the majority of training camp and went with the Jets, and then I got banged up and I got like an injury settlement. Okay, so I never felt like I got it out. And then when I went to Denver in the year after that, I was there the whole off season working out. Then I went to training camp, and then the second day of practice, I got most of the reps. And I got to my hotel room, cramped up, was locking up. I called my wife and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And once that happens, you got to go. But then when you go home, it's still not out of you, though. It's still not gone. It's tough.
No, it is. And like you, some days I wake up and I'm like, I think I can still
do
this. I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm good for like one snap.
Yeah, well, people always say, man, you look like you can still play. And I said, like, that's just the outer crust. On the inside, nothing on the inside of me wants to play anymore. So how old are you? I guess you got to be, I wouldn't say 47 yet.
Yeah.
I turned 50 last year, so I have a few on you. Right. So how does the body feel for the most part?
I mean, I'm struggling, you know.
How so?
Some health issues, every joint. You know, if you ask me to play golf, I think you're my enemy.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause,
you know, that everything about my body is probably the worst thing for golf.
I don't play golf anymore.
You know, bad back, bad knees, bad ankles, bad mm-hmm. shoulders. You know,
to the point where it's restrict. Is it restricting you?
Yeah. I mean, every day, man, I gotta crack and pop and stretch and, you know, put myself back together again, you know, before I can start the day. And there's some cognitive issues, you know, and everyone knows about the concussion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish somebody had told us back then that what the, you know, could do to your brain.
It wouldn't have mattered, but it would have been nice if they let us know.
No, it would have mattered, Ian. I mean, at least, you know, as a defender, you know, I got a lot of ways I can tackle you,
mm-hmm.
but and I got a lot of ways I can come off the ball at you. But I was a guy that lay with my head and shoulders.
I don't think he could have changed, Sheedy.
I would have done it and figured out a way to do it because, you know, I brain damage? Come on, man. If someone said that, I would like, okay, well, I'm gonna, you know, tackle with my shoulder, or when I cover the ball, I'm coming with my hands first rather than I was coming with head and shoulder straight up trying to hit you under your chin.
Sure.
Every play.
But that's what you were about, though. I mean, you weren't Simeon Rice. You know what I mean? You can't play like Simeon Rice. Like, if somebody told me in my fifth year that if you lead with your head, you can be messed up later in your life, I didn't have anything but leading with my head. I couldn't have changed. Like, I couldn't block like Tony Mayberry. I couldn't block like Paul Gruber. I'm a lead, head-leading type of guy. Like, Paul Gruber never led with his head. But that's not really the way he was built. So I think we're all built differently. Everybody rushes differently, and I think it's an innate thing. I'm not sure you can change that up. Now, when you talk about you having some cognitive issues, what kind of issues are you having?
Well, you know, the memory isn't what it used to be.
That's a fact.
You know, honestly, and I haven't gone public with this, Ian, but because you're my brother, I'm going to do it on your show.
Well, let's do it on my show. I appreciate that.
You know, I have not, you know, I don't even complain about having come out publicly or anything, but, you know, I blank out. Like, I know your name.
Yeah.
And I'll see you on the street, and I couldn't tell your name.
You'll forget people's names like that.
I just could. I know what your name is, but I just blank out.
You can't bring it out.
No.
Now, how often does that happen?
It happens all the time. It happens
like every day you're talking about?
No, not every day, but it's just regularly enough that I've kind of accepted that's, you know, part of my life, you know. So that's annoying.
I would say
and scary.
No doubt.
And then I eventually remember it. That's the good news. Not that I forget it all the time.
Sure.
And then, you know, this whole thing, I believe, you know, and I've been in, you know, grassroots efforts in this whole battle, man. And I believe, and it's been proven, that all of us have the CTE.
It's,
man,
a fact.
You know, and the effects of what CTE does to you is still really unknown. You know, they know some things, but they don't know all the things.
They can't know all the things. They'll never know all the things because you have to be dead, and they got to cut your brain open to figure it out.
Right, exactly. And they can tell some things that way, but until they can discover the CT in our brains while we're alive, then they could really attribute it to different things. And I don't know, Ian, man, some days I can't get out of bed because you might as well tell me to push a truck up a hill. That's how much effort it seems to take for me to get out of bed and get started.
Is that depression, you think?
No, that's why. Well, I don't know because it's really the best way I can describe it. I was just talking to Vernon Turner. You remember Vernon?
Of course. Turner? Yeah, okay. The punt returner. Yeah.
Vernon Turner. I said, man, Vernon, you know, it's like my brain's running in mud. Like, it's, you know, it's like muck. You know what I'm saying? It's not churning. It's just dragging, you know? And that's the best way I can describe it.
Are you taking anything for that?
I've tried, man. You know.
What have you tried?
They gave me some Xanax once, which...
Yeah, I don't know how Xanax is going to help you.
I also have anxiety and panic attacks sometimes, too, man.
Now,
that's
how long,
why they were giving me that.
Now, how long have you had those? That's something that's occurred now, just lately?
That's been a long time.
It's been a while, really.
Yeah, it's been a long time since, like, not 2009.
Really?
Yeah.
So panic attacks for any particular reason? Just all of a sudden you just feel anxious?
Yeah. And it gets pretty bad, but... I'm not really and you play with me. I don't know if you noticed, but I never took all the shots and all. I never did all that. I don't take stuff. I don't like it. I'd rather you tell me some kind of other alternative, homeopathic, whatever. Because anything I take, I don't know, it's just my body. Anything I take, I feel drugged up. I feel like I'm a zombie, you know? So I don't, that doesn't work for me. So
have you tried Adderall?
No, and I think that's for, that's not for, what is that?
It's for focus.
Yeah.
It's for focus.
I wouldn't want to try that because I know some kids on that.
Sure.
You know, and they had some negative effects from that too. But, you know, and it's just, you know, 12 years in the league, it's a long time to be beating your body up.
It's a long time, man.
But I go back to, if I knew what the health effects would be, what I'm dealing with now, I would have found a way to play differently. You know, I would have.
Okay.
And specifically when you tackle somebody. Maybe I couldn't change how I'm firing off the line as defensive lineman into offensive lineman like yourself, But I could definitely change the way I tackle. I mean, I was always leading my head. We all live with our head, you know.
Yeah, and let me say this. They've come out with this whole new thing, NFL head up, blasey blah, okay? I'm going to say blasey blah because I think it's all a bunch of crap, personally. Now, you can say what you want about changing your game. But if you're playing against, we'll use a name that everybody knows, Mike Allstott. And Mike Allstott's running through the line. If you don't put your head on Mike Allstott, you won't have a chance to bring down Mike Allstott. So you can't eliminate your helmet. My helmet's right here, okay, from way back. It's got gouges in it like I was in car crashes. There's no way you can get around that. You see what I'm saying? That's part of the game.
Well, right. And those are plays that you just can't avoid. And those are plays if I'm meeting the A-train.
Yeah.
In the hole,
your helmet better be on him.
Yeah, the helmet got to come.
Yeah, it's got to come.
Because you got to hit him with anything you got. And
yeah.
You can't think about it. But there's moments, you know, when I'm running and, you know, and it's not in the hole and I'm running down the field or, you know, coming across the field, you know, there's ways that you can leave your head out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. There's just certain situations that you could choose a different way.
Sure.
You know.
Like, I don't know if I had much choice, personally. Like I say, everybody has a certain way. You know, when we talk about medication, you know, one of our sponsors is Trulieve Medical Cannabis. Have you looked into that?
I have looked into it. I've heard about its great effects.
Did you smoke weed coming through?
What's that?
Did you smoke weed while you played?
No,
and
I never did.
What about afterwards?
And it's funny because. You know, I'm from Berkeley, California, so
and that's a weed capital right there, no doubt. Yeah,
and all the people around me were smoking. I never thought, oh yeah, let me try that. And then when I got to Cal Berkeley, there were even more people smoking.
Sure,
weed.
Yeah.
And I tried it, and it wasn't enjoyable. You know, it wasn't enjoyable. I was like, what? You know, it's making me cough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never got high.
Sure.
People always, oh, you got to be high. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, I'm not high. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what that is.
Oh, the stuff these days will get you high. Don't worry about that.
I know. You know, the stuff these days, they are the THC levels are way higher.
Correct.
You know,
but it's not. Not all medical marijuana is about THC because I do have the vapes that have the sativa in it, but then I also have the capsules that have CBD, and that's just something you take, and it's supposed to reverse the effects of a lot of the brain damage and good for your body, and it doesn't make you high at all. It's just something that helps your body. You know, as far as being therapeutic, you look at the things that medical marijuana will eliminate if when they just say okay it's legal, the Xanax is going to go away and all these other pills that bore holes in your stomach are going to go away because that's all natural.
Okay,
so you need to look into
so
that.
There's some I'm interviewing you now.
Yes, that's okay.
So tell me more about this. Yeah. Marijuana doesn't get you high. Yeah. I don't know what is that.
Well, once again, THC is what makes you high. The CBD is what they take out that have, you know, the medicinal effects. So you can just take a pill and it goes into your body and it doesn't make you high.
Okay.
But it's good for your body. It's good for your anxiety.
You smoke that?
Nope.
No.
Yeah, nope. You can't smoke that.
Because I did get the CBD drops.
It's something like that.
And I tried it.
Yeah.
It was like, eh.
Didn't do anything.
I mean, you know, what does it take? I mean, it's not immediate. You don't feel anything. So maybe. But I just didn't. It tastes nasty.
Yeah.
And
well, that's why pills are a little bit easier.
And you know, I tried it for a while. Mm. I don't know, man.
You know, it's crazy. I never actually tried marijuana until I was 35, which is, you know, I'm from Montreal and there's a lot of weed going on there too. But I was always at all, it wasn't taboo, but I just knew not to mess with it because of the way I saw everybody acting when there was a drug test. You know, when the coach said, "Hey, there's a drug test coming up." You know, all the weed heads are looking around and figure out ways they got to flush out their system and all this kind of stuff. And then we saw players while we're in the league, you know, messing around and getting kicked out of the league and getting suspended from marijuana, which I think is the most ridiculous thing in the freaking world.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, I was like you. I didn't mess with it. And, you know, I have been thinking more and more lately that, you know, that's something I need to really try different types. Anytime I went to Canada, though, you're from Canada. You know, you remember the rap group Red One was the Rascals.
I do. I do. Yeah, absolutely.
So Red One was a buddy of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I went to go visit him in Vancouver, he had some marijuana called blueberries.
Okay.
And that would make me laugh.
Okay. Well,
it does make you laugh. Yeah, it makes you laugh.
Hey, come back. When we're not doing a podcast, come back here sometimes. I'll make you laugh. there's no doubt that I'm going to make you laugh.
All right.
So we're going to have to talk some football here, too, a little bit. Because people, by the way, this is Chidi Ahanotu sitting in with me. 12 years in the league, which is amazing. Tells you a little bit about his toughness. And what you can do is you can email me. It's IanBeckles@RadioInfluence.com. And here is Greg D. Cruz that really wanted to know. First of all, he thanked me for the podcast, so you're welcome. He says, basically, my question is, why are the Bucks waiting for McCoy to lead when he hasn't shown the ability to do so? Now, I'm going to ask you this question. What does leadership mean to you?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, number one, it's by example.
Thank you.
You know, you pound on your chest and yell and scream.
Mm-hmm.
And
doesn't work.
You know, it has to be by example, by your performance and your production.
Mm-hmm.
And when those are taking care of themselves, you don't really need to say anything.
Thank you.
You know, being a leader doesn't mean that you're the loudest one or that you're talking the most. And you know, I've been around a lot of great leaders, and some were loud and some were silent. You
mm-hmm.
know, the question that guy had was why are they waiting for him to lead?
Yeah,
or leave.
Lead, yeah, be the leader. Because Gerald McCoy has been the makeshift leader for the last few years, and I've been very critical of Gerald McCoy, probably more so than anybody in the Bay Area, because
I think I'm the most critical.
Oh, no, well, no, I'm very well documented. I'll pull up a lot of stuff, and he's blocked me on Twitter and all that stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So my thing is this. If you're a general of an army, and you're the leader, and in 8 straight years you lose – you have to get another leader, and you know what? And you said exactly what I've been saying. You don't have to tell anybody you're a leader. On Monday, when you put that film in, the film is going to tell you who the leaders are, who was prepared, who plays hard, and pound your chest. I'm the leader. I never heard Derek Brooks say that. I never heard Warren Sapp. I never heard John Lynch. I never heard Rondé Barber. None of those guys say they were leaders, but it was just so.
It was just so, and Ian, I don't listen to a lot of sports talk radio and the sports talk TV. So I thought I was the only one that was critical because, you know, I'm active on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I have a fan page as well. And I engage. And, you know, you couldn't tell anybody, oh, Gerald McCoy, you know, he's our guy, you know, and you couldn't say anything bad about him. But, you know, and I was talking to Kevin Carter, and sorry to put your name out there, Kevin. But,
good people, though.
You know, just because, you know, I don't want to put his name on this, but, you know, we're defensive linemen. And so I think a lot of people get caught up with the – and I said this on Rock Riley's show. I said, listen, man, Gerald McCoy is a marketing campaign that went wrong. Okay? That's how I put it.
I never heard
marketing
it that way,
campaign
but I get
it. Yeah. That went wrong. Mm-hmm. He was he because of his high draft pick, he was expected to be the leader. He was thrown into that. And, you know, he's making a lot of money also, so now you're the leader. And they built this whole marketing campaign around Gerald McCoy is the next greatest thing. And, man, Ian, you know, back in the day, really good defensive tackles are Hall of Fame caliber. You blocked them.
Thank you.
This gentleman here,
yeah.
he couldn't even carry their helmet, He couldn't carry their helmet.
Yeah.
And the standard – for excellence at that position has gone way down. I mean, you got to tell me you got to the Pro Bowl, you had 5 sacks?
Yeah.
You had 7 sacks?
Yeah.
Like,
but
you didn't get double-digit sacks, you couldn't even think you were going to the Pro Bowl.
But irrelevant sacks, too.
Irrelevant sacks. That's what I told Dirk Cutter.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Dirk, listen, man, I know he's supposed to be the guy, but he doesn't make enough impact plays. A ratio
mm-hmm.
of plays – that are impactful.
Yeah,
they're
everybody
way down.
Gets enamored on the plays that he makes.
On the plays
he's a one direction athlete. He goes one way real fast.
Yes,
and then
that's
if,
all
if
he
the,
does.
If the, and this is another thing, like you said, I played against Reggie White and Howie Long and John Randall and Chester McLaughlin. I mean, I'm talking about the best ever, and This is the one thing they all had in common. If you ran the ball near them, they made the tackle. You can't say that about Gerald McCoy. The ball's run next to him all game long to where I think they're game planning him. He comes out
they
the ball, head
are.
Down.
Yeah.
He's never aware where the ball is, and the ball's going right by him.
Yeah, Cortez Kennedy. Did you?
I put against Cortez too.
Okay, so I mean those you know. That's the site. You couldn't even mention Gerald McCoy's name
in that group, no.
And it's a shame. And listen, anybody's watching this or listening to this, I have nothing against the guy. I don't even know him.
I've never met him either.
I don't know him. But as professional athletes mm-hmm. who played the game, and that's what I was talking to Kevin Carter about, mm-hmm. you know, it's just kind of insulting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we're watching this and everyone's – saying how great he is, and we know the game. We've seen great defense mm-hmm. tackles. And you know, sorry, Tampa Bay Bucks. You know, this was a marketing. It was obvious. You mm-hmm. know, this is the greatest thing. He's on the stadium and tickets and whatever. But we know what great is.
Yeah, but not everybody. And I've said this before, and I've been very critical of him to where I've got hate back, and I telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, if anybody wants to put their resume up against mine to evaluate a three technique, you can't even evaluate a three technique like I can.
No, I probably could.
You know what I'm saying? Like I saw all of them, and I know how to. That's all I played against my whole life.
Right.
So I've talked to Chris Hovan, I go, what do you think of Gerald McCoy? He goes, what do you mean? I go, you think he's a great player? He goes, who says that? That's what he said. Who says that? He goes,
that's what Hovan said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, see, I talked to Dave Wansett before. He was like, I'm like, Dave, let me talk to you. He goes, like, I go, what do you think about Gerald McCoy's play? He goes, why do you ask? I go, I just think his play itself is overrated. And he goes, I agree with you.
Well, yeah. And you know, I asked my agent, Angela Wright. Angela Wright was my agent at the end of my career. I had like five agents. And I said, what is this? You know, why what's happened here? Like, how is a Gerald McCoy make it to the Pro Bowl? And he's like, you know, the most highest paid defensive tackle. I said, hey, man, that's just the way the market has gone as far as the money. And, yes, the play has gone down. But it's all relative.
Yeah.
So now they're gauging who's the highest player based on this new standard, right?
Yeah. What's left.
And that's it. And like I said, I want to say again, I have nothing against Gerald McCoy. I don't even know him.
Mm-hmm.
I do not appreciate as a defensive lineman that is now the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gerald was here, I'd tell him. I say, young man,
yes.
Listen, man, first of all, there were no older vets on the team. I don't think there still are.
Mm.
When you came in to show you the ropes, man.
Nobody. There still isn't.
Not even just how to play football, mm. but how to be off the field and how to be a leader. You know, who was he supposed to emulate?
Well, who are the Buccaneers looking at in general? Let's look back to Buccaneers team last year. Who on that team absolutely positively knows what it looks like to have a championship team? Nobody.
I don't think there's anybody.
Not the front office? Not the head coach, really not anybody. So when you're producing leaders, because I'm gonna give you another leader that's just been produced, Jameis Winston. What has he led? I'm a Jameis Winston fan. I am. But when you're pounding your chest and you're doing eating W's and doing stupid crap like that,
right.
People are gonna evaluate you. And then when you end up losing, because at this moment, Jameis Winston is a losing quarterback. Now we're getting deep into his career where if he doesn't win this year, he's just a loser. So forget about being a leader. Get yourself prepared. Have that film look good on Monday and it'll all fall into place.
Right. And I mean, we haven't had that element on the team for a long time, and when Josh Freeman was here, it was the same thing.
Oh,
that was our whole theme, was to be youngry.
Mm-hmm.
We're youngry. Everyone was so young. After Raheem left, we continue to be young, and we've been young for what, the last decade?
We've sucked too.
But that's a big component.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the I get the idea to get all these young guys and let them grow together, but even when we were together, Ian, who did we have? Hardy Nickerson came.
Yeah, he brought the
right?
He was the glue.
And he wasn't a champion.
No, but he was the glue, though.
Right, but he was part of a storied franchise,
mm-hmm.
right, who had been winning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, and no one wants to talk about Hardy to this day. I have sleepless nights because, you know, they hadn't even inducted Hardy in the Ring of Honor.
I know.
You kidding me? And it upsets me, and I'm going to say this publicly, I haven't said it before, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, John Lynch, even on offense, Mike Allstott, Ward Dunn, did we not feed off his energy or not?
Sure, absolutely.
We fed off his energy.
No doubt about
that. He changed both sides of the ball and was instrumental in changing this whole franchise, and no one talks about him. No one put him on the Ring of Honor. And it's not right. But now you talk about this team and teams before, there's no Hardy Nickersons. There's nobody there to let these guys know what the standard, real standard is. Because before Hardy, well, actually Hardy and I got it at the same year. But, you know, it probably took me 2-3 years. As you know, I wasn't coming out the box, you know, playing great.
Nobody did.
And it took me, you know, 2-3 years of watching Hardy do it.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, okay, well, let me take this to another level, you know. So that's the problem with this team. And, you know, that's what's going to take for us to take that next step. And you want to talk about Jameis. You sound just like me, Ian.
I know.
Like, I say the same thing you're saying, and I'm talking to myself and talking to Facebook, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, well, and I read some of it, and I don't really comment on a whole lot of stuff. But when you talk about standard, that may be one of the more important things in football is standard. And this is what I tell everybody. I remember the way you guys were built. Okay, you built with you coming in young, then Sapp coming in, Marcus Jones, Steve White, Simeon Wright. Okay, we keep on with the names, okay? Now, all the names that I mentioned, all of them had better stats or equal stats to Gerald McCoy, okay? So, but this is the other thing when you talk about standard. Rod Marinelli, who I've said on umpteen occasions, along with Alex Gibbs, is the best position coach I've ever seen. Why? Because he got the most out of his athletes as I've ever seen. I knew this, and you knew this, on film on Monday. If you're not busting your ass, you won't play the next week. And you know what? You're going to stick out like a sore thumb because everybody else is busting their ass, and we don't have that attitude
anymore.
And that's
a good point, Ian, and going back to having someone there to get in your ass, who's getting in Gerald McCoy's ass? The thing that you just said it, that is true. The coaches had a standard, and you already knew if you weren't living up that standard, it's going to be trouble for you.
Absolutely.
But as players, we each kept each other accountable. When we were in that defensive meeting room, it didn't matter. I could say, damn, come on, Lynch.
Yeah.
Not that I ever had to say that.
Nope.
To Lynch.
Not too often, no.
But I could say, come on, Sapp, and he'd be like, come on, Chidi, and, you know, we get on each other.
Of course.
And you need that. You do need great coaches, don't get me wrong, but more importantly, if I had to pick one, a self-policed locker room
absolutely
is what championship teams do. And it's not, oh, I'm afraid. Like I could say to Hardy, come on, man, let's go, baby. Yeah. You know, not that I ever had to say that to Hardy.
Not too much.
But that was the culture that it was in our locker room. And like I said, Gerald McCoy is not his fault, but it's annoying to see the young man walking around town like he's the greatest thing since Michael Jackson. and not know, dude, you're really not that good.
Well,
man.
You know why he can't know that?
Because there's no one to tell him that.
Well, no. Well, that's part of it. Because I've been in the media for 15 years and over. And you know, Gerald McCoy's been around a long time. If one thing you can't say about Gerald McCoy, he's not slick. He's slick. What he does is he befriends a lot of the media. Therefore, they don't speak against him or else he just nixes them. Doom, boom, out. I don't give a crap. I don't care whether he likes me or not. I really don't. Okay? But the problem I have is every year at the end of the year, and when I was on sports radio, all year, people are like, you're wrong about Gerald McCoy. You're wrong. So then I get on the air and I go, did anybody see him this week? No. And next week I go, anybody see him this week? Nope. The week after I go, other than these two plays, did anybody see him this week? No. So through the season, they're like, oh, my God, you're right. And guess what happened at the end of the season? He made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, he makes
the
Pro
Bowl.
You
know what they told me? I told you he's good.
Right. That means you're good, which it doesn't mean anything.
It's a popularity contest.
It's a popularity contest.
Nate Newton used to go to the Pro Bowl all the time. I'll put my film against him all day long. It's a popularity contest.
Yeah, you know, it works. The Pro Bowl, once you get in, then you just keep going.
Absolutely.
As long as you, you know, not terrible.
There's another thing. This, okay, you're an NFL fan. I'm an NFL fan. I'll go to any NFL fan out there and I'll say, name me two defensive tackles in the NFC other than Donald and McCoy. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you can't because
that's why they make the Pro Bowl.
True, and that speaks volumes because, you know, when we were playing, you could just go down the line. Like, each team had somebody who was just, you know, a perennial Hall of Famer.
A beast.
You know, I don't know what happened to that position. I really don't understand it because, you know, when we talk about Warren Sapp, everyone says he changed the game. He changed the position. And there were a lot of great players before him that he himself, I would imagine, would say, yeah, I emulated my game after these guys. So what happened to that position after? Like, you know, we got to Warren Sapp, and then we went down.
Yeah, and but that's a long way from Sapp to McCoy. You know? But when I played, you know, we're talking about, you know, the caliber of players I played against. Like, I'll bring up some non-Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Robert Porcher was a fantastic football player. Okay, Wayne Martin was a fantastic football player. Nobody knows those names.
Yeah, well,
okay, Santana Dotson was a fantastic football player. I mean, you run the ball near him, he makes a tackle.
Right.
He's wreaking havoc.
Right.
And another problem I have with McCoy's rush is it's all or nothing. Great pass rushers, everybody listen to me closely, great pass rushers are always close to the quarterback. There's times where he's miles away from the quarterback. And it's a hit or miss. It's a hit or miss.
Yeah, thing. And I joke with people. I say if you know, if they kept track of pressures and hurries when I played, I'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, man.
You know, because people are, oh, you only had so many sacks, but they don't understand.
Yeah, man.
If I'm in the quarterback's face and he gets it off, I'm affecting that quarterback. And I did that a lot. 46 and a half.
So what was your best year?
1997. I had 10 and a half.
I mean, that's
and I'm wondering. I think Gerald had one double-digit sack.
Never.
Never had one?
Promise you he hasn't.
Yeah, see, I mean, that was our standard.
Absolutely.
That was the basic. Like, you had to have double-digit sacks to even think about that you were a good player.
That's
you
right.
Know? And now it's like, hello, you know, you don't need sacks anymore. Yeah. You know,
and you guys got spelled a little bit. You guys had so much depth. You guys came off the field every once in a while. Not as much?
I never came out the field.
Well, Gerald comes off the field a lot.
These days they rotate the players. I never came out the field in, and you know, we didn't do that. None of us did, really. I don't.
Actually, I would say a little bit after you, they may have a little.
Yeah, it was after me they start doing that whole rotating thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they paying you that money, they want you out there every snap.
Understandable.
And these days, you know, they rotate the players, so you know, I wish, and I would stay on a positive. I wish. You know, that upsets me that, you know, you say he blocks you on Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
But that he blocks everybody on Twitter doesn't completely.
I mean, I saw the – and this is, you know, these players, they do the Hard Knocks on HBO, and that was very revealing. That was very – it confirmed a lot of what I thought that was true. That, I mean, this young man, come on, he's a little quirky to say the least. He's talking about Batman and Robin and all the stuff in his house, and I'm like, this
but
guy
what
is
bothered
not a leader.
You,
not a leader.
What bothered you and what bothered me, fans love. They love that he showed up in his kimono sash. They love that he's dancing to opera in the weight room to his fight song. They love that he's doing superhero jousting with whoever he was doing. And I'm like, this is all so staged and disgusting for me. Like, I can't imagine, you know, Howie Long or anybody like that doing something like that. It's hard because if you're going to be the leader of an NFL defense, this is real talk now. If you're the leader of an NFL defense, this is what you have to be. I will punch you in your effing face. That's got to be the start of it, okay? I don't care who it was. I've seen DBs, linebackers, defensive linemen. You can't be a nice dude and lead an NFL locker room, and it doesn't work that way.
Especially as a defensive lineman, and, you know, it was very disturbing, and it was like, does anyone else see this? I mean, they need to bring a veteran player. Like, he's 8 years in the league now, though.
He's well in the league.
So it's kind of like too late, but – He could use a veteran.
Jason Pierre-Paul. Jason Pierre-Paul.
I don't know his personality though. I don't know his personality.
Well, all I know is this: Jason Pierre-Paul plays real hard. That's half the battle for me. They brought in a couple of players from Philadelphia. They don't have to be big name players, but just hard nosed dudes sometimes rub off on these cats.
Yeah, he needs a hard nosed dude right next to him on that line.
Sure.
And you know that's what I can say. I mean, if Gerald McCoy thinks he's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day, and hopefully that's what he's aspiring to do, hopefully we all try to aspire to that, I think he's sadly mistaken. And I hope he takes his criticism constructively.
He doesn't. That's his thing.
What I'm hearing, he seems a little immature, okay? He seems immature, and he's not going to take the criticism constructively. And it's almost like he's been there 8 years, and everyone's been telling him he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, so who are these people saying these bad things about me? You know, like
the problem is he doesn't have to change. He's fine. He's making out. He's making a lot of money. He's going to the Pro Bowl. He's on the side of the stadium, so he's definitely not going to change. Now we're old school cats. Now we played in the Orange. You got a chance to play in both. Correct?
Yeah, it was the last of the Orange and the first of the Pewter.
Absolutely. Now, going back to some of the players that you played against, who would you say was the toughest opponent you played against at tackle?
I laugh about this because I say these names, nobody's going to know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm going to know.
You know, you might know, but no one else, you know, no one knows these names. Big Cat Williams.
I played for Chicago.
No matter what I did, I couldn't get around this dude, man.
You know, he started off a defensive tackle, and I played against him at defensive tackle.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes, all right. I could not. I threw the book at him, and I could not get around this dude. Even when I thought I was free, somehow he'd get that long arm and just dink, a little tap, and knocks me off.
Well, you couldn't go through him, though.
You know.
He's too big to go through.
I tried going through him. I tried going around him. I tried spinning around him. I mean, he would just sit there. He'd be laughing at me the whole game, you know. And I'd see him. I used to live in Atlanta, so I'd bump into him. And, you know, I say, damn it, Big Cat. And he's just laughing at me still. You know,
that's funny.
He's a funny guy. And the other guy was Mark Tosher from the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
He was just a squatty. He had no business playing tackle.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been a guard.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just a boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And wide. And, again, just super strong for no reason, you know. And you know, Marinelli would tell me, come on, Chidi's a rookie. You know, what are you doing? And, you know, he's a second-year guy. Mm-hmm. Get around him. Like, coach, I cannot get around this guy, you know, for nothing, to save my life. I cannot get around this guy.
Football's
about Mark Tosher had a good career. He played for a pretty long time.
Football's about matchups.
It is definitely.
Because
definitely.
I played against John Randall, I've said this many times, but I want to say 16 times. I don't think anybody played against him more than that. No way.
No.
You know, so I played against him 16 times. I think I gave up a sack, okay? So not bad. Now, then I played against guys like Frank Warren. Couldn't block him. Keith Hamilton, couldn't block him. Big, tall, rangy guys.
Yeah.
My boy Trevor Price. I blocked him, but he was a son of a bitch.
Yeah, but those guys, people know
those
names.
Those are upper echelon. But Frank Warren, nobody knows Frank Warren.
Yeah.
Jumpy Gathers.
Yeah, people know that name.
In the league, they know the name. But if you're not in the league, you don't know a Frank Warren. You know.
Wasn't he with Seattle?
Frank Warren was with the Saints.
Oh, the Saints.
Yeah,
he might have
played with Seattle a bit, but his nickname was Big. I think he's dead now, but the dudes that you come up there and there's, you know, six whatever. Ted Washington. I fought Ted. Like, when I fought against Ted Washington when I was in Philadelphia. He was in Buffalo. I remember in training camp him coming up to the line for one-on-one pass rush, and I walk up and I look at him, and I just start laughing. And I start laughing. I go, this is going to be funny. He goes, you get two steps. And he literally took two steps, pushed me back, and just turned around and walked back. If he really wanted to pick me up and put me in that bag, on the bag, I don't think I could have done anything about it. Big old dude.
Big old Ted.
No, dude. So what weight did you play at?
Well, you know, I came in as a rookie at like 295.
Okay.
And it was funny because old Eddie Kayat.
Eddie Kayat, I haven't heard that
coach,
name in a while.
Old Eddie Kayat and what the hell is our defensive coordinator's name, Ian?
Not Monty Kiffin, but Peters, Floyd Peters?
Yeah, O. Floyd.
Yes.
See how I blank out.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I got here, he said, oh, you got to put on some weight.
And you were 295?
I was 295.
Really?
So I was like, Are you trying to put me at nose tackle?
Yeah.
And so, you know, remember my first year, I played in tackle and nose.
Yeah, we bump heads a lot.
And honestly, Ian, you probably don't know this, and I probably don't because I never told you, but so they were moving me, and I knew I wanted to play in.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that was my best position for me.
It's another world tackling
it. Yeah, it's a different world. And I had to take small steps. And I had longer legs. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys used to make fun of me because I have long legs and a short torso, mm-hmm. and they always called me no back because okay. I didn't have a lower back. That part was missing. You know? I remember. Yeah. So the tackle position, although I played it great at Cal Berkeley, mm-hmm. and it made first conference, you know, All Pac-10, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so I never told you this, but the times I would go up against you, I said, "Oh no, this isn't going to work.
This is not going to work.
I will not have an NFL mm-hmm. career if I keep playing on the inside."
Yeah.
So they were telling me to gain weight. I lost weight. Mm-hmm. I got down to 285, and I did that on purpose so they could never mistake me again.
Yeah, you didn't want
to
get down
to be inside in an interior alignment. And it worked out. You know, I played left end, and I knew that was going to be the best position for me in the NFL.
No, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
That's where you get paid out there. Now, you didn't shock me there because I took a lot of raps on the head, but I remember everything that happened throughout my whole career. I can remember any game. I remember it happened. And I remember once in the program you said, somebody asked you, who's the toughest player you played against? And you said, Ian Beckles in practice. It's in one of the programs. I probably have it somewhere. Out there. So that we got a chat. We played, you went through Sam Weich, you went through Tony Dungy, and you weren't on a Super Bowl team, right?
No, and it's funny because
what year did you what league
I
you
left
here?
I left after the 2000 season.
Okay.
And then
big fan of Gruden's?
I came back and I got to play with Gruden.
Okay.
And you know, I'm a Oakland guy, Berkeley mm-hmm. guy, so I know of him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I never met him until I played for him, but definitely, man. I mean, he's a coach's coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a player's. This is what you think of. You think of coach, mm-hmm. that's a coach. You know?
I am not a fan.
And I'm not saying that I'm a fan necessarily, Ian. I'm just saying the idea and mm-hmm. concept of John Gruden, yes, okay. I'm a fan of that.
I like a coach to look me in my face and just tell me the truth. That's probably the most important thing to me. I don't care if it's Tony Dungy or Ray Perkins.
Are you saying Gruden doesn't tell the players?
He didn't tell me the truth. My face. Nah.
Oh wait, you played with Gruden?
Well, I was with Gruden in Philadelphia.
Oh okay.
When he was offensive coordinator.
Oh okay.
And then I was exposed to him here.
Okay.
When I was in the media.
Yeah.
And we'll say he drew first blood. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that, man. Like I said, I only played with him half the season. I know people back home, back in the town, back in Oakland, in the Bay, you know, a lot of people were frustrated with him. I'm just saying the idea and concept of him, I go to battle with a guy like that. I don't know all the intricacies like you do, but I think, and I'll tell John this myself. I said, John, you're a great coach. I think he gets in his own way because of the shenanigans and the beating on his chest and the bravado. I think that takes center stage sometimes to, you know, just being a coach.
He doesn't do people very well. He doesn't do people. If you look back to his career, and a lot of people think I'm hard on John Gruden, and I don't care what they think because I've been exposed to him quite a bit. If you look back at his career, he really didn't let any player, especially on defense, he couldn't have touched nobody over there. He couldn't have went there and said nothing. On offense, he never really let any player excel for more than 1 year. Like, if you got bigger than him, he squashed it. Now, the whole thing with Mike Allstott, we all know that he did Mike Allstott wrong like any player ever in the history of the NFL. He just did Mike wrong. And, we could debate that all you want, but if Mike Allstott's on your football team and you're not giving him the football, you're wrong.
You reminded me of that. I didn't like how that whole thing went down. But I think Allstott was hurt. He had the neck issue.
Nope.
Right?
He was playing fullback and blocking as a fullback. So if you're blocking as a fullback, I'll be damned if you can't run with the football. So, Mike, the last thing Mike Allstein wanted to do at the end of his career was block as a fullback when he's been a runner his whole career. And he wasn't even a good blocker anyways.
Yeah, that wasn't what he's known for.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Go get Lorenzo Neal and have him dig some cats out. Nobody dug him out like Lorenzo Neal. Yeah. Nobody.
Yeah, he was fantastic. We came in the league together. But
John has a trail behind him everywhere he's gone. When he went to Oakland, people are forgetting that Oakland, who had a team good enough to go to the Super Bowl, traded John, which should tell you how abrasive it got. He got here, won the Super Bowl, everything was great. Ended up getting rid of Rich McKay. Rich McKay? He got rid of Rich McKay. Sent Keyshawn home. Really didn't get along with a lot of the players. And it got to a point where if he stays somewhere too long, it's too much. So I think Oakland, if they don't succeed in the first 2 years, they're going to see that he gets old after a while.
Yeah, and in his latest press conference, he said he wants to take it back to 1996 or something like that.
Camp-wise?
No, he just said he wants to bring football back, his football. He's bringing a brand of football back to the NFL like it was back in 1996. You didn't see him say that?
What does it mean? Is he going to run the ball a lot?
I don't know. He wouldn't elaborate, but, you know, he wouldn't elaborate in the press conference. Huh. So you can only imagine that they might have some button of heads in that marriage between John and the Raiders.
Well, my first beef with John was when I was in Philadelphia, and my first year there, I'd shot my foot up like 5 straight weeks to play. Then the doctor says you got to shut it down, or you're going to rupture your foot. So I shut it down 1 week. Then Bubba Miller was a left guard, and he got hurt. And then we're playing San Francisco on Monday night, and Ray Rhodes asked me specifically, he goes, can you play one more week? And I said, for you, Ray, I will play one more week. That was my guy. So I played one more week, shot my foot up, played on Monday night. Played against Dana Stubblefield, who was a beast, and Bryant Young, who was a beast back then. That's another name, by the way, Bryant Young. He's a son of a gun. So after the game, I mean, I walk into the locker room, could barely walk. Monday, can barely walk. So the doctor says, you're done. You're shut down. I'm not letting you play anymore. And that same day, John Gruden comes by. He goes, I hear you're quitting on the team. And I stood up, and my boy Coop stood in front of me because I don't do that well. You see what I'm saying?
Nah, I wouldn't imagine
and
so.
So it didn't go over well. And then I did the John Gruden show 1 year when the Bucks were 5-11, and that didn't turn out too well either. He wasn't too happy with some of the questions that I had from way, way back. So you're in contact with some of the old fellas, man?
Yeah, I'm in contact with Hardy. Stay in contact with Hardy.
Is he coaching Illinois still?
He's still in Illinois with Lovie Smith.
They sucked last year, boy. Did you watch him play USF? They sucked.
No, I didn't. I didn't see that game. And you know, they told me they're struggling to get talent over there, mm-hmm. and they need some better players. They were recruiting my son Mayan, and we didn't get a chance to visit there because a lot of things, different things happened. But anyway, I'm in touch with Hardy, Martin Mayhew.
Yeah, great Martin. Yeah, like
Santana Dotson, mm-hmm. Eric Curry.
How's Sag D doing?
You know, he's holding on, man. You know, yeah. We all getting old.
Does he have
some
issues physically?
Yeah, I haven't asked them specifically, mm-hmm. but you know, you can see it.
You can kind of hear it in their voices. Yeah.
Yeah, you can see it in their eyes and you know things.
What about Eric Curry?
And of course, Eric Curry. I stay in touch with him all the time.
I liked Eric, man, but it didn't work.
Well, you know what?
He has some stiff hips.
Well, Eric did not get watching film. Well,
that's a problem.
And you know, like last year, I think Alabama played Clemson here, right? So Eric was here, and we were just in the car. I was driving him somewhere. Out of the silence, he goes, you know, Chidi, I should have watched more film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sitting there like, what do I say to that?
Yeah, you should have. But it's good. You know? Like afterwards, you know, you're thinking when you're older, you're like, gosh darn it. If I'd have just done that. I get that from Ty J sometimes, too. Like Ty J's like, man, I should have, if I just cared. You know, because, you know, he went through a lot and it wasn't that important to him at the time. And physically, he had everything he needed. He just was burning it on both ends. And it's hard to be successful that way. You know, so you see some of these players now and, you know, you learn as you get older and some people don't. But if you don't learn, you're just not going to have a very long career. How much more savvy were you at the end of your career than you were at the beginning of your career?
It was night and day. Mm-hmm. you know, and I probably could have got around you by the end of my career.
By the end of my career, I was pretty locked in too, bro. I don't know, I couldn't practice, but I'm gonna see some of your tricks. You gonna see some tricks.
I developed some new tricks that the league had never seen before, and I was using it when I was a Niner. That's mm-hmm. when I invented it, and it was killing people. Ian,
was it a forklift? You did a jumpy gathers?
No, it wasn't. And it's my. Oh, you'll appreciate this, mm-hmm. okay? Because I was getting older, mm-hmm. I couldn't turn a corner like I used to. I said, man, I got to figure something out. So I kept getting closer and closer to the tackle because I couldn't. What's the point? I'm widening out to do
so
what?
To a four-eye?
Yeah, I didn't get that close, but mm-hmm. then eventually I did get to that four-eye. But then I said, why don't I just take a head up? So I got head up on the tackle.
And it could go both ways.
And I would do it obvious passing downs. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I just wanted to take a chance and just take a risk.
Sure.
Yeah, what? I'm 12 years in the league. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Cut me? I messed up. Okay, coach, sorry. But it was it forces the tackle to turn into a guard, a guard mentality, right?
And because the angles are different.
And the mm-hmm. tackles don't know what to do. It's like you wouldn't even think what are you doing in the NFL? Like mm-hmm. that, like, you know, there's a big difference between tackle and guard. So when I line up head up on a tackle, I was killing him.
You take a step inside, make him take that big step, then hit that edge.
There's a lot of different things you can do.
Absolutely.
And really, I was coming straight at him first, and I would back off the ball like a step just so I had room to build up enough momentum. Because, you know, by first, second step, you're already going full speed pretty much for us, you know. And I would back up from the ball so he couldn't get his mitts on me and just stymie me right at the line. And when I got two steps in him, coming straight at him before he could even touch me, right? So now I'm pretty much going full speed while he's standing still. He's still standing still. But if a guy wanted to drift back on me and just backpedal, but he'd have to pretty much just backpedal, right? And who, you know, they're not good at backpedaling. They go shuffle, step,
Jones.
Step, step.
You ain't doing that to Walter Jones.
Yeah, I never did against Walter. Walter could backpedal?
Walter would backpedal some long-ass arms on him, too, but he would get punched on that.
Well, most guys couldn't, then. It was really effective. And then I actually did that on the guard, too, which it wasn't as effective, but it was still working, especially in the games when I line him head up on the guard. And that was really, you know, we ran games great, me and Warren. And our old D-line did, really. But
you guys ran games better than anybody I've ever seen. When I see people running games of Bucks specifically, it makes me it disgusts me because nobody's sacrificing. Somebody has to sacrifice.
Yeah, someone has to sacrifice. And in sacrificing, you can also free yourself up, though.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of times. So
push it off the tackle and push it off.
And ricocheting off the guys.
And I watch Gerald McCoy sometimes, going back to him, run a TE and get punched. Pass the tackle. I'm like, you ain't doing it the way you're supposed to do it, man. So
who's going to show him to do it? There's no one there to show them.
Rod Marinelli would definitely show him how to do that. That's for sure. Anyways, we're out of time, brother. I appreciate your knowledge,
man.
You know what I mean?
Being
hopefully
off.
Everything else is wonderful in your life and try to stay as healthy as you can.
I'm doing it, man. I'm
getting
better.
If you need anything, let me know. And you do a lot of social media.
I'm on Facebook.
What's your handle?
Just Chidihana, too. I'm on Facebook. It's public, you know. And I'm refereeing a lot of debates on that page. So yeah,
I love it. Well, follow Chidi at Chidihana, too. I'm at Ian Beckles. This has been In the Trenches. I want to thank Hess Spinal Centers again for being our title sponsor. And next week, I believe we're going to have Trevor Sikkema. So don't go anywhere. And I love you guys for listening in. We've been talking football, and it's very enjoyable. So have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
You have been In the Trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is a Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I want to talk a little bit about the role of analytics in football. Get asked this a bunch, and it's the new wave of this and that. Folks, analytics are not new to football. Okay, let me tell you what's important. Football analytics. Football analytics are important. I'll explain what that is. Analytics by people that are not football people have very little relevance. There are certainly things that you can ascertain from analytics, but then you take that and you have to put it under a football microscope. If you don't do that, it's useless. Okay. Analytic folks don't like to hear that. They increasingly are sensitive to their relevance. The reality is football's a business. In any form of analytics help you in your business, but it is the business of football.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.